Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast for September 29th, 2013. This is episode 32. I'm JD Durant.
And I'm Nate Parsons.
And I'm Scott Pollard.
And I'm Arcturus 101.
And this week on the show, we have Arcturus from the MGC TV podcast, which is a really fantastic podcast. I would highly recommend you going and checking it out. Thanks for being here, man.
You are too kind. Thank you.
Yeah, and this week on the show, we're going to be reviewing Rush and Don John, the new movies that came out over the weekend. And going off of that, we're going to be discussing our top three Joseph Gordon-Levitt movies, which should be pretty fun. We have made a few changes to the podcast that we'll kind of be announcing over the next couple weeks. But one of the major ones is for our movie series, I think we're going to kind of shorten those a little bit in terms of doing them back to back to back. So we'll probably just do one every couple months or something like that, just so we can put more time into them instead of just kind of doing quick reviews here and there. But hopefully that'll make the podcast a lot more fun and be able to go into a lot more in depth into some other things. But before we get going, how was your guys' week?
I've had a fantastic week in the work sense because I got a lot accomplished at work. It was very busy and the weekend's the only time I get to relax, so I'm very pleased that I'm doing something I love right this minute. But overall, it's been fantastic.
Very good to hear. Scott, how was your week?
I had a good week. It was busy, but I got to see a lot of movies and I got to see a lot of baseball, which is my favorite sport to watch. So I enjoyed it. Yeah, I had a good week. What about you?
I had a fantastic week. My week was very busy. I had a lot of work stuff going on and lots of movie stuff, especially toward the latter half of the week. But it's been pretty nice. We're actually starting to ramp up some wedding stuff. The fiance and I are.
So, all right.
It should be pretty fun. We're probably sending out some invitations soon, so it's getting good. All right, Nate, how was your week?
My week was pretty good. Busy with work, as usual, and saw a couple of movies.
All right, very good. Well, Nate, I know that you have to leave here for just a few minutes, and then you'll be back here in a little bit. So Nate's going to leave now, but then he'll come back in a little while. So he'll be absent, but then he'll be back. Yeah. So you might not hear him for like 10 minutes or so.
Yes, BRB.
BRB. All right, when we come back, we're going to review Rush. Let's get into it.
And here we go.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast. This is episode 32. Why don't they make F1 cars safer?
Don't you know? It's the risk of death that turns people on.
Five races in. How's it going so far?
It's fine. Just got a little problem with an Austrian rat and his team of Italian cheats who've destroyed my car.
What are you talking about?
Talking about the race in Spain that I won.
Yeah, in a car, which is not legal.
5/8, 7 inch too wide. You know that doesn't have the slightest effect on speed. But you complained and your team of lawyers leaned on the authorities. Now we've had to rebuild the car and it's become a monster.
At least it's a legal monster.
So you've had to resort to cheating.
You're driving an illegal car and call me the cheat? It's pathetic. Rules are rules.
Yes. And rats are rats. Thank you. Thank you.
Do you really think it upsets me, James? Calling me a rat? Because I look like one? I don't mind it. Rats are ugly, sure, and nobody likes them, but they're very intelligent, and they have a strong survival instinct.
Wonderful.
All right, guys, Rush is directed by Ron Howard and stars Daniel Brühl, Chris Hemsworth, Olivia Wilde, and a few other people as well. All right, well, what did you guys think about Rush?
Well, you know, I'm very interested to hear what you guys thought of this film, because in general, Europeans love Formula One. I'm not entirely sure what kind of coverage Formula One in general gets over in the US, but here in Europe, we are suckers for Formula One. And it's been 3 years now. We've had two great Formula One films, Rush being the most recent one. Now, I absolutely love this film. It had a few historical inaccuracies and a few things were painted with a bit too broad a brush, if you catch my meaning.
Sure.
But overall, in terms of bringing the wonder and the excitement of Formula One, especially from an era which, you know, that we don't see today, was fantastic. The aspect of danger and the kind of courage these guys had to drive these cars was phenomenal. So I really love this film.
Well, one of the first questions I had for you, I guess, because, you know, you kind of touched on it, that Formula One racing here in the States doesn't get a ton of coverage. It's not as big over here. And I'll get into that a little bit more when I talk about it. But my big question for you, and I guess you kind of touched on it, was the historic accuracies, because I feel like a lot of people here in the States are going to have zero idea. And I had no idea either. And I think that's maybe part of the reason I liked it so much, is because I came in from a really pure perspective. And so I was just kind of wondering what your thoughts on that. Like, was it way out of context, or was it pretty close on?
Well, I mean, certain things obviously they created and made up for the sake of drama. So, for example, when Niki Lauda and Chris Hemsworth are racing in the lower, Niki Lauda and James Hunt are racing in the
little time travel.
When they're racing in the lower divisions, I don't know how much of that rivalry was apparent. That smacked a lot of just being created for drama, for drama's sake, which wasn't so bad.
Some of the
inaccuracies, for example, I mean, I think there's a pivotal race in which Niki Lauda has a phenomenal crash. Yes. And the way they explained it in the movie was as if his car failed.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I mean? Yeah. Whereas actually, the reality is he messed up.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Little things like that, you know, just, you know, gnaw on the nerves a bit. But that's because I'm a fan. Do you see what I mean? Overall, there wasn't a major, you know, sort of deviation from the actual storyline overall.
What, in that specific scene, was the weather as bad as they made it out to be?
Well, it wasn't. I think the rain had stopped by that time.
Okay.
So the track was wet anyway. But then the whole. I don't know if it's been a while since I watched the film, but I don't know if they translated this quite well. But I think the rain starts and it's very wet. Then the track dried up very rapidly. So there were sections of the track which were very dry, and there were sections that were very wet. But overall, you were faster if you're on your dry slick tires.
Sure.
So that's why there was that mad dash into the pits to change the tires. But it wasn't raining at the time when he had the crash.
Okay.
And that, you know, the part about him, you know, a mechanical failure, but it really wasn't. It might be partly due to the fact that the writer of this film and Lauda met like 30 plus times at a restaurant in Vienna to discuss what happened. So possibly Lauda could have.
It wasn't me, I promise.
You know, you never know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He was the prime source for all this, so.
Well, and he does narrate a lot of it, so it does kind of make sense. All right, well, Scott, what are your general overall thoughts?
As far as Rush goes, I didn't really know what to expect, because I know Niki Lauda, and I had a friend who really loves Formula One, so he has tried to get me educated a little bit on Formula One over the past 10 years or so, and I've watched some with him. You know, we have the Speed Channel here. I assume you have that there too, Arcturus, or do you?
Oh, no, I don't think – well – I mainly watch my Formula One on BBC and Sky. If there's another channel, I'm not aware of it.
Okay,
but those are the main two outlets.
Okay, so that may be our American, you know, network that shows all the races and stuff. So that's generally what I see it on, is the Speed Channel. Mm-hmm. So, and I think it's actually shown in the movie at some point. I'm not sure, but anyways, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know about this rivalry. I definitely had never heard of James Hunt. I'd never heard of him. So I didn't know if I'd like this movie or not, but I really loved it, and I thought it was the best action movie I've seen this year. It probably is easily the best racing movie I've ever seen, other than maybe Senna, which was a documentary a couple years ago. But it's right up there with that for me, and I really enjoy Daniel Brühl. I'm a huge Daniel Brühl fan anyway, because I took German film in school, and Daniel Brühl is like the big... you know, guy in Germany for girls, sure. Apparently. So, you know, he's been in Goodbye Lenin, The Educators. You know, of course, we know him from Inglourious Bastards. So, yeah, I really enjoyed Daniel Brühl. I really thought he stood out here. And you know, I really enjoyed seeing him. Really liked this movie overall. So, I loved it.
I really liked it, too. I was really surprised going into it. I didn't have any expectations like you, Scott. And I don't think Nate did either. But, you know, like I was saying earlier, Formula One's not really that big over here. And I feel like for you to watch it in the States, you really have to seek it out. Like it might be on the Speed Channel. I didn't even know that, if that's even true. Other than I think there's like a race or two they may have on ESPN throughout the year. But for the most part, it's really not that big over here. And so I came in with some really just a lot of purity, I guess. I didn't know about the rivalry. I don't know much about the rules of the sport. All I know is that they're in these tiny little cars that go really fast around really curvy tracks, and sometimes it's a bit dangerous. That's really all that I knew. But I also saw that it was directed by Ron Howard, who I really like quite a bit as a director. And I liked Chris Hemsworth, too. I don't know much about Daniel Brühl outside of Inglourious Basterds and maybe a few other things. But for the most part, I really liked it quite a bit. And the cinematography is the big thing to take away.
Yeah.
It's the first thing I guess you'll notice anyway.
Absolutely.
When you go into here. It's amazing. It's really gorgeous, but yet it's also kind of dark and gritty, especially when they're on the racetrack. And it's just fantastic. I love how Ron Howard uses his camera to showcase the cars in action with the gears moving and the spoilers and all that sort of stuff. And even as they go around the track, he uses his camera in some really unique and creative ways to really, you know, make it more intense and increase the drama and all that sort of stuff. And it was really fantastic. I really liked it quite a bit. The story is pretty amazing. I'll get to that in a little bit. I'll give you guys a little bit more of a chance to say something, but I definitely wanted to say something about the cinematography because it's definitely one of the better ones of the year for me, for sure.
Yeah, Anthony Dodd Mantle, who did Slumdog Millionaire, was incredible here. You know, he put some put a lot of shots in the corners of the screen, so it made the rest of the next shot would look really big, you know, really wide, and I really enjoyed that a lot. No surprise, because he has done a lot of good work. He's done a lot of good photography. What did you think about that, Arcturus?
I loved it. I think it's a shame. I feel really ashamed because I haven't put out our review just yet. I'm still editing it. But I love the way a lot of the stuff was filmed because if you watch any of the race coverage anyway, there's lots of helicopter overhead shots. And I remember being very worried that Ron Howard was directing this because by his own admission, he wasn't a Formula One fan.
Right.
So you always get worried when somebody who's not au fait with the subject matter.
Yeah, I would. You know, yeah, absolutely.
Just what I mean. But actually, he passed with flying colors. He Good. Obviously, whoever his advisors were, advised him very well as to how to film this very well. You know, the sort of the most exciting time of a race is the first lap, sort of the grid, the start, you know, and the mayhem that happens. And he captured all those elements really well, you know, from the in-cockpit views, you know, sort of, you know, the just over the shoulder of the driver, you know, looking down the steering wheel and so forth. All those things he nailed very, very well. And I just remember being very pleased that actually for a guy who didn't know much about the sport beforehand managed to capture the essence of racing and make it seem very exciting.
Yeah, he did, you know.
You know, there was only one slight problem I had with it, and that was a lot, only because I'm a race fan. In Formula One, a lot of the racing is done in the corners. So when a move happens, it's, yes, you know, the final result is seeing the car overtake the guy around the corner. But it's always interesting to see how they set themselves up going into the corner, who breaks and so forth, and the angles they hit when they, you know, when they're aiming for the apex. But I guess he doesn't know that. And I guess not everybody who's watching the film is a Formula One fan. So it's kind of irritating when they just show an overtake. You go, I wanted to see the build up to that move.
Sure.
You see, but anyway.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And it's really interesting. And one reason I'm really glad you're here for this specific review, because I would have known none of that.
Me either.
Going into the movie or even out of the movie. So that's really interesting to hear. I know one other thing that I really loved that I guess you can kind of assume about this sport anyway is just the danger that goes into it. And I feel like Ron Howard was very specific about showing that. There's a couple of scenes where, or just a couple of shots where you see like damaged cars or, you know, there was a huge wreck, or even just with Chris Hemsworth's character that he throws up before every race, just kind of, you know, he's so nervous, he knows that he could die at any moment. They are specific about mentioning that two people die every year because of this sport. And then, of course, there's the big accident that Arcturus, you referred to earlier in this review. So there's a lot of danger elements that goes in here. And I guess you kind of assume that. You already know that going into this with this sport. But he was very specific about making it really intense to just kind of build up that drama. And it worked really, really well. And Nate is here, finally. So let's get Nate into this conversation. Nate, what did you think about Rush?
What did I think about Rush? I actually really enjoyed it. It was a big time.
A positive review this month.
It was a huge surprise. I was not expecting to like it, especially since it involved car racing, and I'm not a huge fan. But it was really exciting. I really liked, all the racing stuff was great. I know you guys were just talking about the cinematography, which I thought was fantastic. It definitely felt like it was filmed in the 70s, very grainy look and whatnot. I thought the performances were really good. I really liked the scenes between Chris Hemsworth's character and the other guy. I don't even know.
Daniel Brühl.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in anything else that I know of.
Inglourious Bastards, you know him from that.
Oh, okay. I really like their scenes together. I wish there were more of them. The score by Hans Zimmer was fantastic. And I guess my main gripe with the movie is that the beginning was a huge cock tease. I got really pumped up. I really got into it. The music was swelling up, and then the screen goes black, and it says 6 years earlier, and I was like, "No!"
But that's a good. I mean, that's a good thing from Howard's perspective. It's a great transition, and it goes right into the story, which I thought was done extremely well because you get perspectives from both of these characters. You kind of get to know them really well. And what I love about the story is how it sets up these two characters to be both the antagonist and the protagonist at the same time. Yeah. It really gives you the opportunity to either like one or not like one. And at one point, they're both kind of the bad guy, and at one point, they're both the good guy. And then by the end of it, you're kind of rooting for both of them, and you see the dynamics between the two of them, the relationship, and how the competition drives them. And that, to me, was done extremely well.
Yeah, I think that was built. I think that built a lot of respect for these two guys in particular. You know, like going back and forth, and whether you liked them or not, it was really building respect. You know, they were tough and they respected each other, and it was well written. The script was written on spec, so they didn't. You know, Peter Morgan didn't know if anybody's going to pick this up or not. Actually, so he didn't know if it'd get a big budget, so he didn't want to focus on the car, you know, chases too much, car races too much. But I think that benefited the film because the character relationships were so good because of that.
I just wanted to say, just on the point of these two characters with Peter Morgan's writing, I agree the script was fantastic. The only thing I didn't appreciate was that they painted them like I said earlier on, there were two chalk and cheese. It was too much. One was black and one was white. It was very much, you know, Niki Lauda's he was the clinical guy. He's sort of the modern day Michael Schumacher, this guy who doesn't care about anything else but the victory and the rules. And James Hunt was sort of ridiculously, you know, the maverick. Do you see what I mean? And
yeah.
The reality was James Hunt was a bit more clever than that. I mean, you know, he's actually a guy who went to the equivalent. We call them public schools here, but they're sort of private schools. You know, he was a very well-educated guy and he was quite smart. Sure. And so to paint him as this guy who just cares about racing and nothing else, you know, it's like,
and ladies.
Actually, you know, yeah, ladies. Yeah. Well, that side of things was true, but I didn't like the fact that they made Niki Lauda out to be all the master technician. And James Hunt had nothing else about his
right, game. Right, okay. I see what passion. You're saying now. Okay, yeah.
Do you see
okay.
what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
But at the same time, I also think that by doing that, obviously they're going to over-dramatize that a little bit for the sake of the movie. But I also think it also, what draws you to his character, like they kind of said it throughout the movie, like he does these things, he acts this way. Yeah, he's a little bit of a risk taker, but he's also very likable. And I felt that way watching the movie too. Like I liked them both, but for different reasons, which is what made the script very strong for me.
Mm. I mean, there's the other thing. Sorry, I'm going into something that really irritated me as well, which is not a big thing, but it's just a minor thing. But in general, in Formula One, everybody says the performance of the car generally, or whether or not you win the race, it's about 80% car and 20% driver. You know, so basically the best Formula One teams have the best engineers and the best designers, you know, and basically you could pick the top four drivers, stick them in the best car and they would win. So each season is all about which team can design the best car, which of the drivers will harness that power and sort of get it over the line, you know?
So much like NASCAR here. Yeah.
Okay. So exactly. So what irritated me was that they made Niki Lauda to be this. He knew everything about the car, and that his tech crew were these monkeys with wrenches sort of banging on the table. Like, oh, we don't know what to do. You know, it's like, come on, you know. Like, yes, he may have made some adjustments, but the reality is that car's performance was a lot to do with his design team, not just him.
Absolutely.
On that note, I had a question for you, Arcturus, because I did not know if this would have been true or not. You know, when Niki Lauda goes to Ferrari for the first time, and we see Enzo Ferrari out there watching him drive the car around, and he stops, you know, and he's like, well, you guys are Ferrari, and this is a piece of crap you make. Would that happen? Like, is that kind of like, is that true that he like helped Ferrari become better?
Well, I mean, there are definitely examples in history where a driver adds a lot of impetus to the team, but that's to do with feedback. So, I mean, the famous examples of driver feedback are, you could say, and I don't know how much you guys know, I don't want to bore you with current Formula One, but there's Michael Schumacher, who went to Ferrari in the early 2000s, where they weren't winning anything. Then Michael Schumacher turned up and transformed them into a championship winning team. But it's more to do with, if you have a good driver, he would tell the engineers that actually this is how it handles in the corners. We need to fix this. And then it's a combination of the engineers being able to alter the weight of the car, change this and that, to give him what he wants. Do you see what I mean?
So
it's never so much. I mean, yes, the driver could come out of a car and go, yes, this drives like a piece of, you know, excrement. But, you know, the engineers would be able to fix that for him. I mean, this guy, you know, most of these drivers have not been to university. They haven't learned advanced aerodynamics. They haven't learned, you know, physics and mechanics.
He goes in and he's like, did you guys use magnesium parts?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we didn't. And it's like this dumb moment where they
don't know anything about
that.
Exactly. So, you know, it's a bit irritating. Like, come on, you have to give them a bit more credit, you know?
Yeah,
for sure. But I also feel like you can make those same kind of arguments for a lot of different films, though, really. You've dumbed down other parts of the movie so that way the main characters can be lifted a little bit higher. And obviously they do that for character's sake.
But I can see how that would annoy some
F1
people.
For sure.
Especially the engineers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
<you know. laughs>
Yeah, but I mean, I liked how they played on the rivalry, though, and the competition. And it's those character-building moments like that where they dumbed down the engineers that make the characters and the story between them so good in the movie, and it just kind of builds that up and builds it up and builds it up. And I like how they did that, and it kind of comes to a nice little piece toward the third act of the film where Niki Lauda has this, you know, injury or whatever. He comes back 40 days later or something like that, or a couple months later. And I love the scene right after that when he comes back for the first time and he meets James Hunt and they have that interaction. And it was the competition and the rivalry that may have caused the accident, but then he lets him know it's also the same thing that saved him. And to me, that's what works in this movie. Yeah, maybe it's a bit cheesy, but I loved it. I thought it worked really well.
No, actually, true story, that conversation actually did happen. And because there's an interview here on the BBC where they interviewed the team principals, and the team principal for McLaren at the time said how he saw James Hunt go up to Niki Lauda, and they actually split the conversation because James Hunt did tell him, you know, I thought it was partially my fault. But, you know, there's a gag at the end of the film where James Hunt tells Niki Lauda, you know, how he looks as an improvement. He's only, I don't want to spoil the gag,
yeah.
But, you know, that he actually said that in the pit on his race back. You know, so those conversations did happen. So bits like that were true. You know, cool. They did have that conversation. They did say that was true.
And that's cool for me to hear because that was one of my favorite parts of the whole movie. That's cool.
Also, I have one more question for Arcturus real quick. I read that they would not allow Hemsworth and Brule to drive Formula One cars in this, and they actually had to mock up some F3 cars. Do you know why that would be?
Probably because it's too dangerous to drive Formula One cars.
Okay. I didn't know if it was like a prestige thing or, just too dangerous.
No, it's just too dangerous.
We can't do this.
Gotcha.
People die every year driving them. We can't have that on set.
Yeah. Maybe they're agents.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's obviously Formula One is a much safer sport now than it was back then. Because, I mean, I said this in our podcast. I mean, you know, nowadays it's, you know, the drive, they're not stick shifting. It's all pedal shifts and you've got traction control and ABS and all these automated startups and all the rest of it. And the cars are much more aerodynamic. I mean, now they've got all sorts of gizmos to literally keep that car glued to the road, you know? But back then it was literally an engine and wheels, you know? And so to drive Formula One cars, you need what they call a super license. So I think they just thought, you know, you need to be a really good driver to stick an actor in a Formula One car. He might depress the pedal a bit more and just fly off into the distance, you know? It'd be disastrous.
Thanks. Yeah.
Just one quick thing I want to touch on before we finish this section is the performances. I just wanted to get you guys' thoughts on it. I know we've kind of briefly touched it, but what did you guys think of Chris Hemsworth and Daniel Brühl's actual performances here as these two guys?
I thought Daniel Brühl was absolutely fantastic. If you look at any interview with Niki Lauda back in the day, Daniel Brühl nailed it. Now, you might say that's a bit easier because he speaks German, so maybe imitating the accent was a bit easier for him. But either way, the mannerisms, and in a sense, he had the more interesting character, didn't he? You know, there's a lot more happy with Niki Lauda's character in the film, but Daniel Brühl really nailed it. Chris Hemsworth did an okay job. I just think he didn't have much to do apart from, you know, compared to Daniel Brühl, but I still enjoyed the performances.
Yeah, I thought Daniel Brühl was awesome, and he's going to be in the Fifth Estate coming up here, so I'm glad he's having a American, you know, a coming out fest of sorts. You know, he was in Inglourious Basterds, but not a lot of people know that character. It was a minor role, so hopefully this means bigger things for Daniel Brühl, because you can tell he really studies his characters well. You know, he really puts a lot of effort into it, and I think Hemsworth probably doesn't as much, and he's a little busier with Thor and all this other stuff, so, you know, maybe he doesn't focus as much, but I did enjoy both of them really well. I thought they were great. And I also wanted to say that I thought Olivia Wilde was fine, and that you know, she's having a pretty good year too. She's got, you know, Drinking Buddies, which I still need to watch.
It's good. Go watch it.
Burt Wonderstone. So she's coming out with a lot of stuff, and I'm glad to see her, you know, getting some decent roles. So yeah. What'd you think, Nate?
Yeah, I thought the two main guys were really good. I liked both of them. I thought Daniel Brühl, I hadn't recognized him from anything. Obviously, he was in Inglourious Basterds. I'll have to go back and check that out. But I thought he was pretty fantastic. And I'm looking forward to whatever he's in next.
Yeah, he was really good. He definitely shined really well. And I know you guys were touching on Chris Hemsworth's character maybe not being up to the same level, but I don't necessarily feel like his character called for it. His character in the movie was just this competitor driver that liked to be around women a lot and to be this womanizer. And I feel like for that specific role, I thought he did it really well. I don't think the character necessarily called for more than that.
Yeah, and also it could be because Morgan spent all that time with Lauda and he's got all these details about him and not really as much about Hunt. So yeah, it could be that too.
Absolutely. And Lauda in the movie also narrates a good chunk of the story as well, especially toward the end when we find out what happens to James Hunt and all that sort of stuff, which I thought was a really great sentimental touch, by the way. I thought that was done extremely well, and I liked
that
quite a bit.
It was done very well, and actually something I don't know if you guys knew, but James Hunt actually went on to commentate on Formula One afterwards. So without knowing it, I'd actually been listening to James Hunt commentating from way back in the 80s up until...
Oh, nice.
And he was a very clever commentator, and he partnered with another chap called Murray Walker, who was like the iconic voice of commentating on Formula One. And the two of them were such an amazing combination. He did know his stuff, which is why I guess we're a bit disappointed by the way they made him too broad, too basic. You know, we knew him to be slightly more clever than that, and just to make him this, you know, this unrefined sort of caricature, you know, was a bit, you know. But anyway.
And the last thing I just want to touch on, Nate already talked about it a little bit, but Hans Zimmer, his score here was amazing. He's on fire this year, if you ask me. I loved his score for Man of Steel, The Lone Ranger. Everything he's done has been fantastic this year. And like Nate said, like I loved how it ramped up at the beginning. It was awesome, and then kind of died down a little bit. But throughout the movie, it was still there. Definitely in the racing moments, his score was absolutely perfect. It was really good. I really liked it quite a bit.
Me too. Like you said, Man of Steel and Lone Ranger, and this, he's having a great year. And those were the scores of those movies were all I really liked about it. So yeah,
especially the Lone Ranger. Yeah,
he's having
Ranger.
A great year.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I have an interesting story. There's a great program. I wonder if later on, maybe I'll send you guys a link for it. I don't know if you can watch it in the US, but it's called The Sounds of Cinema. The BBC is running a series about the history of movie scores. I hope you guys can watch it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And they did this section where they started interviewing Zimmer, and they're talking about budgets and how Hans Zimmer is one of the most expensive guys now at the moment.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Because, so I'm really surprised they managed to get him, given that there was all this talk about how to get funding for this movie. I'm wondering whether it was literally a freebie from his end.
Because I know. Yeah, that's really interesting, because I was reading a little bit about that today, that this is only Ron Howard's second independent film, besides his very first one. And to get someone like Hans Zimmer, exactly. and even really Chris Hemsworth, who is pretty highly wanted nowadays, I thought that was pretty interesting too. Yeah, that's a good point.
Also on this budget, $38 million budget, you know, to get Hans Zimmer, to get all these people, you know, it's pretty impressive for Howard to do this.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It must have been a lot of goodwill just to make this film, you know.
Yeah. I mean, given that and the cinematography and everything, you wouldn't guess that those.
$38 million.
Yeah. It's really well done, yeah. All right, well, any final thoughts on what kind of a grade would you guys give Rush?
I would give Rush an A-. Minus because of the few niggling bits and pieces, and because something I didn't bring up in the review, I was a bit disappointed they didn't use more real footage for the racing. But I think as an introduction to Formula One, I think people who don't know about the sports are spoiled because they've got this and Senna to watch. And I think those are the two of the greatest rivalries committed, you know, in the sport. And the fact that they've been committed to screen is fantastic. So A- for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I've learned a lot from hearing you talk about this stuff, but, and I really enjoyed, I'll say this, I really enjoyed how Ron Howard stuck Michael Andretti in there. They said his name several times.
Yeah.
Showed his car because as a kid, I was telling these guys the other night, as a kid, I had his F1 car, like a Matchbox little, you know, figure car or whatever you want to call it. So that was the only way I recognized, you know, anything from like my life. So it was cool to have a connection in there, you know. Other than just, you know, Ron Howard or whatnot. So I really enjoyed that. And I really enjoyed this whole movie. I thought it was great. I've been telling everybody to go see it when I've been talking to them. So I gave it an A+.
Very nice. Very nice.
A+. Wow. I loved Rush. I think it's one of the best movies I've seen so far this year. Definitely a huge surprise. I was not expecting much from it. But I thought the performances were great. Cinematography was great. The racing scenes were exciting, and the score was fantastic, and I'm gonna give it an A.
Yeah, I'm right there with all you guys. I loved it for all the things you guys said. It's really good. I'd highly recommend going and seeing it, especially for the American audience out there. I know that F1's not as big as either NASCAR or a lot of the other sports here. But if you get a chance, go see it. Don't let that be the reason you don't go see this movie, because it's really, really good. And it's I would highly recommend it. It's fantastic. And I gave it an A as well. It's very great. And I have a full review of this up on our website right now. So go and check that out at InSessionFilm.com.
If you agree or disagree with our takes on Rush, let us know by leaving a comment on our Facebook page at Facebook.com/InSessionFilm or tweet us at InSessionFilm.
And leave a comment on Google+ or Letterboxd. Our usernames on there are In Session Film. And you can also email us at InSessionFilm@gmail.com. We love the emails, so keep them coming.
The In Session Top 3 is next, and we're going to be discussing our top 3 Joseph Gordon-Levitt movies. And will his new movie, Don John, make the list? Find out. We'll be right back. You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast. This is episode 32, and now we're going to be discussing our top three Joseph Gordon-Levitt movies with his new movie Don John coming out this weekend. So before we get going, did you guys have any specific criteria or anything that you used to pick your list this week?
Well, I simply went for my top one is the movie which I felt he carried on his own. Okay. So that's the one I have in my number one. And the least favorite is the one which I felt was probably not the worst film that he's done, but I think in terms of probably got us as an audience to discover who he was.
Sure.
As an actor, I think in terms of him displaying the greatest range.
Okay. Scott, did you have anything?
You know, this guy is one of those actors that I've grown up with in a way. In America, we've got to see him on Third Rock from the Sun, and he's been in a lot of stuff since of my lifetime. So, yeah, I just pick my favorites.
That's exactly what I did.
Of course. That's Nate's criteria every week. I'm more like you, Arcturus. I kind of went, I wanted it to be something where I enjoyed the movie overall. I loved the movie for what it was. But I also liked his performance and what he did in it. He didn't necessarily have to carry it himself, but I wanted his performance to be something that definitely stood out to me and the movie overall in general. So that's kind of where I went with mine. That being said, Arcturus, what is your number three?
My number three is 500 Days of Summer. Very now, nice. Before everybody thinks that's a weird choice, and I don't usually go for romantic films, but I think this is a rom-com. Is it even a comedy? I'm not sure. But it is. He does display a huge range of acting. And I think the story, the fact that it hasn't got a happy ending, and it's just one of these very real looks at a relationship, why two people might fall out of love. I think he displayed everything, and he was, there was nothing. There were no tricks. There were no tricks to hide behind. There was no grandstanding scene. There was no CG. There was no action set piece. It was just him and Zooey Deschanel, and I think he actually came out best in that film, and I enjoyed it. So I think that's my number three.
Yeah,
it's definitely a good choice. I actually highly considered it myself. All right, Scott, what is your number three?
So the first time I remember seeing Joseph Gordon-Levitt was in Angels in the Outfield. And actually, besides The Lion King, it was probably the film I saw most in my childhood. I remember I made my parents take me 7 or 8 times to see it in theaters. I loved it that much.
A lot of times, though.
Yes, absolutely. I loved it. I loved Christopher Lloyd because of the Back to the Future. So he was in there. You got Tony Danza from Taxi, which was on Nick at Night at that time. So you had a lot of people in there that I really enjoyed at that time in my life. Yeah. And I loved baseball. Yes. So I love that movie, and I had to put it on this list.
Very nice. That's a good choice. All right, Nate, what's your number three?
My number three is The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh.
Where he plays Blake, a.k.a. Robin. I thought he was a great new addition to the cast, along with Anne Hathaway. I thought he did a superb job. He played a police officer, and he was just very determined. He was normal, but he was very heroic, definitely the trademarks of Batman. And, I would love to see him in the next Batman, but obviously we know now that that's not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Yeah, but he did really well. I did like him in that role, too.
Yeah.
I'm really curious, though, if they'll end up doing something with that, though, the way they set it up at the end.
Yeah, me too. I was saying that on the way out, You wanted it to happen. So.
Absolutely. All right, for my number three, I went with the small comedy 50-50. This is inspired by a true story. It's definitely it's a little bit heart-wrenching, but also one of those that is funny and enjoyable in some weird little ways. And if you haven't seen the movie, he essentially is diagnosed with cancer at the age of 27 and has to deal with fallout of relationships and having to deal with that. And he finds out he has a 50-50 chance of surviving the cancer. And I loved it. I thought the dynamics he had with Seth Rogen was fantastic.
Yeah.
And as someone who is struggling and not knowing whether he's going to live or not, that's a tough situation to be in. And I felt like he pulled that emotion out of me extremely well. And it's definitely one of his more heartwarming roles for sure. And in some parts it's hard to watch. I thought it was fantastic. It was very, very good.
Yeah, it was really good. I remember watching that movie and I was 27 and so was he in this film. And he had some back pains and so did I. And so it's a very strange movie for me to watch, but I did love it. And I did have a friend who survived cancer who watched this and he, you know, brought him to tears. So yeah, this is definitely a good movie.
Yeah, it's fantastic for sure.
Now that you mentioned it, I can't believe I didn't have this in my list. That is a fantastic choice.
Yeah, thank you. All right, Arcturus, what is your number two?
My number two is Inception. I love Christopher Nolan. JGL, just for brevity's sake.
There you go.
Yeah.
I believe he's fantastic in this one. I preferred his performance in this over his role in The Dark Knight Rises. See, in Inception, he fits in really well with the team dynamic. You know how, you know, DiCaprio is the lead and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so forth. I think he plays his role very well. So he's sort of this, you know, he's on par with DiCaprio in terms of thinking up the plans and so forth. But he's also very physical. He has that one action scene in the hotel lobby. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed him a lot more in that film than I did in The Dark Knight Rises. That was my tie for my number two pick. Was it Dark Knight Rises or was it Inception? And I went with Inception in the end because overall I preferred that film to The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure is a debate for another time. But
yeah.
But I definitely think, you know, he's a stronger performance in Inception than it was The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, I would agree. And that might come
and
up
I
a
think
bit
that
later.
For me, Inception was a better film, so that's probably why I would agree.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Scott, what is your number two?
Actually, I'm glad that you guys already mentioned these two because I had a tie for number two. You know, two number movies that will be on the top. It will be at the far left of your DVD collection if you're a crazy person like me and you alphabetize things. You got 500 Days of Summer and 50-50. So, yeah, we've already talked about these, but I love them. I really think Zooey Deschanel was really good as well in 500 Days of Summer. So,
yeah,
you know, and 50-50, like I said, it's great. I love Seth Rogen in this. He really picks good roles, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt is fantastic in both
these.
Yeah,
he's really good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Fantastic. All right, Nate, what is your number two?
My number two is one Scott already mentioned, Angels in the Outfield.
Nice. I didn't know if anybody else would
do
it.
Coming back. Coming back.
I mean, I remember watching this as a kid, and it was pretty great. And yeah. I actually saw it fairly recently, and you could definitely tell that JGL was going to have a pretty good career.
Yeah, yeah. You could.
Yeah.
You could.
He was really good at it.
Also, at the game the other night, there were people doing the Angels thing. So that's still gone 20 years later.
People still know.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
Very nice. All right. For my number two pick, I went with Looper.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, good one.
And this was a little bit of a surprise to me. I guess going into the film, I didn't really have any expectations. I thought it looked kind of interesting, but it wasn't going to blow me away based off of the trailers or anything. And I went into the movie and I had a wonderful first time experience with it. And I loved the dynamics he had with Bruce Willis, especially that scene when they meet for the first time at that small diner place or whatever. That conversation is amazing.
Yeah.
Really, really good stuff there. And I thought throughout the whole movie, he was really good. The dynamics were amazing. The story came across really well. The ending was kind of a bit ambiguous to me the first time I watched it, but I still loved it. I thought it was great. And overall, just had an amazing experience. And I thought he was really great in it. I thought he was fantastic. So that's why it made my number two. All right, Arcturus, what is your number one?
Well, see, I went for Looper as my number one.
Sorry, staring into your eyes. It's too strange.
Your face looks backwards.
Yeah.
So do you know what's going to happen? You done all this already as me?
I don't want to talk about time travel. Because if we start talking about it, then we're going to be here all day talking about it, making diagrams with straws.
We both know how this has to go down. I can't let you walk away from this diner alive. This is my life now. I earned it. You had yours already. So why don't you do what old men do and die?
Why don't you just take your little gun out between your legs and do it? Boy.
Because I think that he's the one who actually carried that film. Yeah. Bruce Willis has not got the same kind of pull he does these days as he did back in the early 90s and late 90s. I think people went to watch that movie because of the concept. And I think within the film, you remember more about JGL's segments than you do Bruce Willis's, I think. And it's the first movie where really he was required to be, you know, he was required to actually imitate, you know, do an impression of Bruce Willis. He was actually doing more work as an actor. Do you see what I mean?
That's true.
He had to do more work as an actor. And he was on screen a lot in an action role. And you had to empathize with him. You know, so you see, in these other films we've picked, he's sort of been able to hide behind a lead. I mean, aside from 50-50, I suppose. But, you know, there's been someone else to carry that with him. But I felt in Looper a lot actually worked with him. If there'd been anybody else who didn't quite carry it off as he did, it would have failed, I think. But, you know,
Absolutely. I agree with you. And Bruce Willis here in America, anyway, he's still got the following as far as older people, like, you know, 50 and above, maybe. So that got them in the door, in the seat, I think. But I agree with you. Joseph Gordon-Levitt definitely carried the movie. Yeah,
I would agree. Although I would argue that this is one of Bruce Willis's stronger performances. In this
recently
decade.
Yeah. Compared to other Die Hard movies. That way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was fantastic. But I won't disagree that Joseph Gordon-Levitt carried this movie because I thought he was fantastic.
And that's a great pick for the list here. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Scott, what is your number one?
Actually, surprisingly enough, my number one is Don John.
Listen, you decide what color. I'm going to meet you at the registers. Just want to pick up a few things and cleaning products, okay?
Well, where are you going?
What?
Where are you going?
Nah, I'm almost out of Swiffer pads. I'm just going to pick a few up.
What pads? What?
With a Swiffer.
I don't know what that is.
You're on a Swiffer?
What is that?
Seriously?
No.
Oh, babe, it's the best. You got to try it. What do you do for your floors? You got those nice floors in your place. What do you, mop?
No.
What do you do?
I sweep it up with a broom.
No, I mean to really clean it.
I don't know. The housekeeper does it.
Oh, right. Yeah. Listen, I'll just be a second, okay?
No, come here.
What?
You're not going to go buy a mop right now. It's embarrassing, okay?
No, babe, I told you, it's not a mop. It's these pads.
I don't care. You shouldn't be doing your own housework anyway.
Why not?
Because you're a grown man. I mean, you shouldn't be cleaning your own floors.
Oh, I enjoy doing it.
Look, you know what? I'll call Rosa for you. She'll do your place.
So, Film Lord reviewing this week. I, you know, I was really looking forward to this based on the trailer, and we'll talk about it later. But you know, this is exactly what I wanted from Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He's really shown his maturity, and you're starting to see him, you know, pick up some influences from other things that he's done, and you can tell that a lot of this is based on his life. So I like that a lot. And Don John's my number one.
This is another one where he highly carries it in some really good ways. And we'll get into that here pretty shortly. But yeah, that's a strong choice. All right, Nate, what is your number one Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie?
My number one JGL movie is 500 Days of Summer.
We've been like Sid and Nancy for months now.
Summer. Sid stabbed Nancy 7 times at the kitchen. I mean, we have some disagreements, but I hardly think I'm Sid Vicious.
No, I'm Sid.
Oh, so I'm Nancy.
Let's just eat and we'll talk about it later. That is good. I'm really glad we did this. I love these pancakes. What? Tom, don't go. You're still my best friend.
Very nice.
We've already talked about it quite a bit, but I love this movie. It's probably my top rom-com ever.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I think JGL is fantastic in it. I love his chemistry with Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah.
And I really love the musical number he has.
Oh, yeah.
About maybe halfway through.
I almost forgot that. Yeah,
where he's singing Hall & Oates, You Make My Dreams. Fantastic. Nice.
That is awesome. And that's a rewatchable movie, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of replay. It's very good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. My number one movie is Inception.
So, Saito, we can train your subconscious to defend itself from even the most skilled extractor.
How can I do that?
Because I am the most skilled extractor. I know how to search your mind and find your secrets. I know the tricks. And I can teach them to you so that even when you're asleep, your defense is never down. Look, if you want my help, you're going to have to be completely open with me. I need to know my way around your thoughts better than your wife, better than your therapist, better than anyone. If this is a dream and you have a safe full of secrets, I need to know what's in that safe. In order for this all to work, you need to completely let me in.
Enjoy your evening, gentlemen. As I consider your proposal.
He knows.
Let's go. And okay. I picked this for some of the same reasons I picked Looper. I love Christopher Nolan, as you were saying, Arcturus. And this movie just blew me away, like especially as a first-time watch. I walked out of the theater wondering what the I just watched. And
yeah, I agree.
I had to like sit with it for a long time.
I think I did too, yeah.
But Joseph Gordon-Levitt is amazing here for all the reasons you guys have said about it. I thought he was strong. The hotel scene and that whole sequence was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of wondering how they pulled that off. I'm sure there was a lot of camera tricks and whatnot, but to kind of be in that kind of a setting and to understand the situation he's in and then to be able to have that sequence, I thought was really impressive. Yeah. And it was very fun to watch on screen.
Speaking of that scene, on the special features, they do show how that's done, and it's just they just suspended everything. Like they're on
harnesses and whatnot. Yeah.
Everything's suspended.
Oh, wow. Okay.
No, that's very pretty cool. Interesting then. So, yeah, so that's pretty impressive. And I thought he was great, and I love the dynamics he has with the rest of the cast. And overall, that movie just blew me away. It was probably my number one that year or close to it. And, yeah, I loved it.
It's phenomenal on Blu-ray, too, in case anybody hasn't seen it in HD. It looks amazing on Blu-ray. So, one to buy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And another Hans Zimmer score that you need to download.
Yes.
Very, very good. Yeah, there is a theme there. So, okay, all right. Well, any honorable mentions this week?
Well, the only honorable mention I have, like I said, was 50-50 because I sort of forgotten about it. And as you guys were speaking about it, I remembered. And it was a very heartwarming story. Maybe I blanked it out of my mind because of the depressing subject matter.
Sure.
But,
sure.
But that should have, if I had a top four, it would have been my fourth choice, yes.
Yeah, I had, I liked a lot of the you guys named, and Inception is certainly one of my, honorable mentions. But as far as one movie I wanted to mention is Electrolux, which is not a great movie at all, but he is in it. And I really enjoyed this movie because honestly, I felt like it's a little preview of what we got in Don John. So I kind of like it as far as like a companion piece to Don John. So yeah, check it out if you like Don John.
All right, Nate, do you have any honorable mentions?
Well, I had Inception as well. And then I also had Brick,
that's a great one.
A film noir set in high school. It's actually Ryan Johnson's
same as Looper,
first movie. And then I had a movie called The Lookout.
I've not seen that one.
Yeah,
no, neither have I.
He's kind of like the super popular high school athlete and all that, and he gets in a car wreck and he has short-term memory loss, and these guys kind of use him to help rob a bank.
Sure. Interesting. I check that out.
Interesting.
It's pretty
good. Is it older or newer?
I think 2007.
Gotcha.
Maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's quite recent. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, I had 500 Days of Summer as well. I highly considered it. It was definitely up there for me. And I didn't really consider this movie, but it was a nice surprise. I didn't really have any expectations, and it's not a bad watch, but his 2012 film Premium Rush was not bad. It was actually pretty surprising, and
it was really surprising.
So it was, I had zero expectations going into it, and it was pretty good. Michael Shannon is also in that, and he's pretty good in that as well. But yeah, that's all that I had as on my list.
All right, you've heard our picks for top three JGL movies. Let us know how your picks stack up against ours. You can email us at insessionfilm@gmail.com or leave us a comment on Facebook or Twitter or on our website at insessionfilm.com.
Okay, just want to talk about the poll results from our poll question on our website this last week, where we simply asked, what's the best Ron Howard film? And we had Frost Nixon, The Da Vinci Code, Cinderella Man, A Beautiful Mind, Ransom, Apollo 13, Backdraft, or other. You can just write in something. If you guys had to pick one, what would you guys pick? Arcturus, what would be your favorite Ron Howard directed film?
Ooh, out of the ones on your website, I would have to say Probably Apollo 13, only because I'm a space nut and I love all that stuff about the early explorers and everything. So it's a dramatization of that. And I know we know the story and everything, but I really enjoyed that film. I, it's one of those weird things. But as in the cinema watching that, and despite knowing how the story ends, I was still on the edge of my seat. So that's my favorite film.
Yeah, I would agree. And I feel like Apollo 13 is one of those films you can watch over and over and over again. It's so rewatchable, and I love it every time. It's very good.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing, Apollo 13. I had a business professor who used about a week of class to go through Apollo 13 and show how you would be a leader, you know, from Tom Hanks' performance in Apollo 13. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I like it a lot.
Very good. All right, Nate, what would you have?
A Beautiful Mind, and it's not even close.
It is a good movie.
Yeah, it's really
good. I love A Beautiful Mind. And we talked about it on our movie series not that long ago. And it easily won this poll with 44% of the vote as well. So it was highly picked. Apollo 13 had quite a few votes as well. And we had one person write in How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And I'm pretty sure I know who that is. And she's going to marry me. So, of course, that had to be in there.
Not only because she likes How the Grinch Stole Christmas, but also for other reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to straighten her out, though.
That's how she is. If she did our top three, she would have only had one movie, and it would have been 500 Days of Summer. That would have been all three of her picks. But that's how she is, and that's why I love her. Also, just want to say a quick note to those supporting the show. If you want to support us, just click on the premium tab on our website. And there we have a bunch of bonus content that you can download for just 99 cents. So we really appreciate your support. Well, Arcturus, I know that your time is kind of limited with us today, but we really, really appreciate you coming on, man. We've absolutely enjoyed having you being here. And you're going to have to come back sometime because this was way too short. So you have to come back sometime.
Thanks a ton, man. I really appreciate it. It's nice hearing your voice. I follow you on Twitter. Anybody that doesn't follow them on Twitter, do that and listen to their podcast because I really enjoy it. And I liked hearing about the F1 stuff from you. So
It was very, very good.
Oh, it was fantastic being on here, guys. And thank you so much for the invite.
No problem.
I listen to your shows as well. JD, I tell you all the time, your show is very well produced. I really appreciate the audio quality, and I hope I haven't dropped the audio quality of your show.
Not at all.
Through my dodgy recording because of the troubles we had before we started. But you guys have a great format, and it's very, very nice. Thank you for having me on board.
I appreciate it. And for anyone listening that, for whatever reason, don't know who you are, how can the people find you?
Well, I am part of a small group of guys who podcast out of London. Most of us live in London anyway. And we have a few American correspondents, actually, guys we've been talking to for a long time. So we are the Movies, Games, Comics, and TV podcast. So MGCTV for short. Our website is on... can be found at, rather, mgctv.co.uk. And essentially, it's myself, Arcturus101, with The Beast and Prof Marvel and Token85, Princess Claire and Billy Quick. We're essentially a group of friends that bored our wives silly by speaking about movies all the time on the phone after the cinema until one of them decided, why don't you guys just do a podcast? So
nice. And it's good. It was a good choice.
So now we don't bore them and we just bore each other.
It's
great. Yeah.
When I was asking Nate what his favorite podcast was, he named you guys. So I had never listened to you guys. So I, subscribe now because of that. So
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. That's very kind of you guys. Like I said, we don't do games as much as we should because we're gamers as well, but we just don't get the time to. I guess it's the one thing you can sort of play to completion and review. We need to improve that and improve our comics as well. But if you want to listen, we just try and make it we try and keep them short because A, we're very busy anyway, and B, just so you can get as much different shows from us. So we appreciate all the downloads, people, and it's very nice. And join the debate, please. Join the debate. It'd be fantastic to hear from everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely go download these guys' podcasts. It's very good. They're very entertaining, very funny. Follow them on Twitter, too. It's really good stuff. And thanks again for being here, man. Really, really appreciate it.
No, thank you one and all. And definitely we can get you guys individually on and all in one go on one of our shows pretty soon, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you don't come back on our show soon, I might have to come to London and find you. So just going to throw that out there.
Well, I'm sure the bad weather will send you back in the opposite direction. So,
but yeah, really, really appreciate it.
No problem at all. Thank you so much, guys.
And coming up next, we'll be discussing Joseph Gordon-Levitt's new film, Don John. This could get interesting. You feel it, baby?
You're listening to the Incession Film Podcast. This is episode 32. Movies and porn are different, Scott. They give away awards for movies.
Hey, they give away awards for porn, too.
How'd you get my Facebook?
Oh, get right to it.
Yeah.
I just looked up your name.
I didn't tell you my name.
Well, obviously you did, because I looked it up.
No, I definitely did not tell you my name.
Yeah, you did.
I think I will remember that.
Well, no offense, but you were pretty wasted the other night. I mean,
can I get you
so
guys
was
some
I.
Drinks?
Yeah, Diet Coke, please.
Yeah, Coke.
Coke and a Diet Coke. I'll be right back to take your order.
All right, I had a few drinks the other night, so I may not have remembered telling you my first name, but I definitely did not tell you my last name.
I'm telling you.
Now, don't lie to me.
Hey.
Look, you don't know me, so I'm going to let you off the hook this time, but trust me, in the future, you'll be much happier if you always tell me the truth.
Wait. I'll be happier?
Well, you don't think I could make you happy if I wanted to?
Don John is written and directed by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Scarlett Johansson, Julianne Moore, Tony Danza, Brie Larson, a few other people as well. And what did you guys think about Don John?
Well, this was my number one Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie, of course. So I definitely loved it. I've only seen it once so far. I have plans to go see it again this week. So I'll be anxious to see it again. But I really enjoyed it a lot. I felt like it was a great coming-of-age tale about how the media affects us and how the media makes us think about each other and how people objectify women and even women objectify men. So, you know, I really loved it. I thought it was really smooth and kind of sexy. And, you know, it was just a tightly packed, nice movie. So what do you think about it, Nate?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was well done, well acted, but it really didn't do anything for me. There was a lot of sex, a lot of nudity. Pretty much all I got out of it was men like sex, they like porn, they like to fantasize about it when it's not real, and women do the same with romantic movies.
Yeah.
Which, that, I guess that's
I think
the whole
that's
point.
Part of it. Yeah, that's yeah, part so, of it. Sure.
That's,
yeah.
That's a lot of
but,
what
I mean,
saying,
it
yeah.
really is okay. I mean, I won't ever see it again, probably. I mean, it was well made, well done.
Well, I guess I'm more in your boat, Scott. I really love this for a lot of different reasons. One, it talks about something that I feel like most filmmakers intentionally try to stay away from. Here's a perfect example. Hey, Nate, do you like to watch porn?
Don't ask me that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly my point. It's because nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody likes to talk about it. It's a sensitive subject, and it's something that is raw and intimate, and it's something that is private. And so for Joseph Gordon-Levitt to make a movie that deals with it in really heavy, in-your-face kind of ways, I thought was really impressive, and he had a lot of gall to do it. And I feel like the way that he came about it, I thought was done in an incredibly realistic way. I feel like if you are watching this movie and you didn't think it was realistic, you have zero idea what addiction is. And this movie deals with porn addiction, to me, I feel like, in incredibly impressive ways. It's something that does have effect on people's real-life relationships. And I think the perceptions that sex and love that we get from the media in porn and in romantic comedies do ruin real life relationships. And the way that he pieced that together definitely made that come across really well. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like you're talking about, porn addiction is a part of John's character here, and it really is approached in a radical new way. And for a big name like this, who has a lot to, you know, he has a lot of clout, but also this is his first written and directed movie, so it's pretty risky to make it about some of this kind of stuff, which, you know, may only relate to the younger population, the younger viewers, which may be the only people who see it anyway. But you know, I felt like being somebody under 30, you know, I feel like I identify a lot with this character. Not really as much about the porn addiction, but just about relationships in general and how like I view them. And you know, I've listened to an interview with Joseph Gordon-Levitt today, actually, on KCRW's The Treatment, which is one of my favorite shows. And he, you know, he was saying that, you know, it's more about how we make a girlfriend a thing instead of a person, or a boyfriend a thing instead of a person. And
yeah,
one of the scenes that makes that really clear is early on when they meet, meaning Scarlett Johansson's character Barbara and John, who is played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. They meet and she says, you know, you're kind of cute, you know, and she kind of looks away and then she starts thinking about what can I do with this guy? What can I make him into, you know?
Sure.
What? And then, you know, the first time they have a sexual encounter, you know, oh, can you take a night class, you know? And there's several things like that in this movie. And, you know, it's really interesting.
And even going before that, when Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character sees her for the first time in the club, you know, He's a little bit drunk, so that kind of plays a part of it. But his, you know, he's talking to his boys about how hot she is.
Oh, it's
and so he's already fantasizing about her anyway. Of course, he tries to pick her up, and it doesn't work. So after they meet out for lunch later, but yeah, I mean, it kind of starts before that.
And the only reason he goes over there is because, you know, she's a 10 to all the guys.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So the fantasizing starts from the very beginning.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed the whole objectification part of that.
And in that scene, isn't there like a glow on her that nobody else has?
Yeah, they probably do
a little bit of that with the lighting and to kind of make her stand out in the spotlight a little bit.
Which is definitely Godardian, which is definitely why part of the reason why I'm predisposed to love this, because Joseph Gordon-Levitt, he gets a lot of his influence from the French New Wave, and I really love a lot of those films, so you know, the dialogue's kind of quirky at times, and like you say, you have some little visual effects that just pop out of nowhere. So, yeah, I definitely enjoyed that.
And I think this movie speaks to sex, not necessarily in a bad way. I think it's something that people tend to take to bad places, but sex in itself, there's nothing wrong with it. We're obviously very sexual creatures to begin with, but men and women go about it in very different ways. Men are very visual by nature, obviously, which is why porn is extremely popular and to the billions of dollars every year as a business. And women need pursuit. They need the lovemaking, which is why rom-coms do so well, because that's girls' way of fantasizing all that, as you guys have mentioned. And the interconnection that these two characters have with one another is a little dramatized for the sake of the movie, obviously. But I thought it was pieced together extremely, extremely well, and it was very effective, and I think it was done as tastefully as possible. I don't think he's trying to necessarily make fun of anything. I don't think he's even saying anything bad about the porn industry. It has nothing to do with any of that, but it has a lot to do with sex addiction, not even sex addiction, more porn addiction and fantasizing and how that affects relationships. And which it does in a lot of ways, and I thought they played it off extremely well.
Yeah, and just to mention, like what you're saying about the rom-coms being the girl's way of doing it, and porn the guy's way of addiction or whatever, it's just a hyper-realization of what they really want, which is for guys the one-sided physicalness, the sex. You know, that's how they you know, at that point in his life, that's how he was connecting with other people. And in that point in her life, you know, she's been taught that you should have a prince and he should rescue you, and basically the whole movie they go to together, you know, it's kind of it's this guy that's been waiting
for you. Special someone.
Yeah. Special. Which, by the way, that was awesome, right? Yeah. Anne Hathaway.
Oh, yeah. Channing Tatum. That was pretty funny.
Or Channing Tatum making fun of himself because we had him in This Is the End.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm starting to like him a little bit. I like that he'll definitely.
Those little cameos he has are great.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Very good stuff. I did see one comment where someone was commenting on some of the stereotypes in the film. And I do think that maybe they play on some of the stereotypes a little bit, because, you know, they obviously say that all men watch porn every day.
He does.
Which,
he says
yeah.
that. Which we which, know, people in my theater laughed at that. Like, there's laughing people
yeah,
in my theater.
I don't think that's necessarily 100% true. Now, I would argue that all men have seen porn at some point in their lives.
Probably women, too, I would say.
Yeah, most. And a lot of women, too. But they also speak to, like, all single women are boring in bed and they're not willing to do the crazy stuff that men fantasize. I don't necessarily think that's true either. I think that depends
yeah,
on the person.
Me too. You're right. Yeah.
But I think the point of all that is what we've already said, that porn and rom-coms have side effects because of what we see in the media. And so maybe they were playing to those stereotypes to exaggerate that to make their point. I don't necessarily think if you're walking away with that as a criticism, I think you're missing the point.
Yeah, I think you've missed the point that the whole thing was about this guy being able to get beyond this physicalness. The only yeah. thing, you know, he found a way that, you know, Julianne Moore's character, which I won't say too much because it would spoil it, but, you yeah. know, she is somebody that is not fit in this world of theirs, of Barbara and John's and all his friends. They're all in this fake world of, you know, images, everything, and, mm-hmm. you know, I need to be careful how I act because I care about all what these people think. She did not care at all what people think. She one of the first things she talked yeah. about to him was porn, so, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. she's sure. totally opened him up to all this new, you know, ways to connect, I guess, to people. So yeah. I definitely think that's a minor.
And I think it's just a great metaphor for how people can learn how to use sex without porn to make a connection with the person that they're with.
Yeah.
And obviously, for the movie, they're trying to do something a little bit different. I think he's looking outside the box a little bit, and I yes. think it's effective for the movie. But you can also take that as a metaphor of just looking beyond your addiction, looking for something to get past your addiction, so that way you can connect with the person you love. Because I think the last thing people want is for something like that to affect their sex life, especially with a wife or some sort of significant other that they are going to be with for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What did you guys think about Tony Danza here?
Loved him.
I loved him too.
And the first scene he has where he's swearing at the TV with the football game going on, that so reminded me of JD.
Yeah.
I immediately thought of JD because that's exactly how he acts when he's watching football.
Well, one, I have a good reason to be because I'm a Michigan fan. So, and I'm a Lions fan, so figure that one out.
A lot of yelling. A lot of being.
It was yeah. really funny when we were watching Prisoners. I don't remember if I mentioned this or not, but I was talking to my brother about it because he was asking me if I liked it. And when they first go into the house to Thanksgiving at the beginning of Prisoners, there's like one little shot of the TV and it's the Lions game on TV. And I was talking to my brother about how every Thanksgiving it's the same tradition, and it's always awesome. We wake up, we have like our Thanksgiving, it's more of a lunch, so that way we can eat and watch the Lions game, and it's we always overeat and then we watch the Lions lose. Like, it's not Thanksgiving without the Lions losing. So yeah, there's a lot of yelling that goes on.
Yeah, and I definitely thought of my dad too in that scene. I think a lot of people identify with a lot of older guys because, you know, his character is a lot like a lot of older guys. You know, he's
sure.
a grizzled kind of guy working. You can tell he's a hard blue collar type
yeah, yeah,
of person.
Yeah.
And I thought he was great. And, you know, this is an old connection in Angels in the Outfield for Gordon Levitt. So he handpicked
sure.
Tony Danza.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
this is somebody that he's kind of mentored mm-hmm. him when he was young. He was saying on that show I would listen to. But yeah, I really enjoyed that. I just wondered if you guys did too.
Yeah, I thought the whole family dynamic I thought was really great. And
yeah.
I kind of touched on this with you guys, but I loved Brie Larson here.
No.
She says two words the whole time, but she just sitting there. And to me, it was just really funny how she just showed up at all these scenes and wouldn't do anything
yeah.
and then has one comment toward the end, which I thought
it
was
makes
really
me wonder funny. If he cut out a lot of her stuff, you know?
Yeah,
because
yeah,
she
know.
Is a big enough name to where you
I know,
think she'd
but
have more
she literally just sits there and just plays
that
with her phone and does
so
this.
So stupid.
How is it stupid?
But I guess it's a typical girl who's always on her phone and doesn't.
Yeah. They have a lot of those kind of characters in here too. Like, there's tons of like supermodels in this movie. Nina Agdal is one of them.
Yeah.
And there's tons more that I didn't even, you know, put names down because there's so many. It's so many women that are models and
sure.
Gordon Levitt must have the connections.
So,
and also, he's a pretty clever guy. He gets to, you know, here's a movie where he gets to be the lover of many women, including Scarlett Johansson. I mean,
exactly.
You know, let's just be honest. He's a pretty good writer for himself.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm gonna write a movie where I get to sleep with a bunch of
women. Yeah, you wouldn't let anybody else play that role. I guarantee that.
Yeah, that is a good point. So, but overall, I thought it was really well done. I think it speaks to that particular thing really well, and it's something that people don't like to talk about. And I mean, it's really good. I think it can be pretty uncomfortable for a lot of people.
Oh yeah,
to see
there will be
theaters.
People walk out. I'm sure there will have some walkouts.
Sure.
Know?
I mean, I think they even had to cut back quite a bit just to get an R rating.
Yeah, I believe it.
It was NC-17 at Sundance.
Yeah. And so they cut it back a little bit, and it's pretty graphic with some of that stuff. If you struggle with sex addiction, I wouldn't recommend the movie for you.
Porn addiction, yeah
for sure. Or porn addiction.
Stay away.
Although I do think there's something there to, you know, I think maybe this is helpful for people who might be addicted to porn, because eventually he's able to realize that, you know, hey, this is so one-sided, and I should never expect women to be like this. So I think there's something for everybody here.
And even on the flip side of that, too, I think with women, too, that you can't necessarily expect your life and relationships to be what you see in the movies all the time.
Yeah, totally unrealistic.
I mean, it is. I mean, I think men in real life do their very best to try to be a knight in shining armor for whoever their woman is, but on some level, we are human. We're going to fail.
Yeah.
And so those expectations have got to be lowered a little bit, because we'll never be able to live up to them.
Yeah.
And so those cool fantasies are just as dangerous for them as porn is for men.
And much like in 500 Days of Summer, he goes from being with a girl who has all those expectations to eventually realizing this girl is way not for me. She's mean. 50-50, same thing.
Sure.
So you got this, you know, repeated thing going on of Joseph Gordon-Levitt's characters having these really sexy, they're way hotter than the girls he ends up with, usually.
And
then, you know, then he moves on to somebody a little bit more mature, who Julianne Moore in this movie had way better, more realistic things to, you know.
Yeah.
Great scene in that was the sex scene with Julianne Moore, which doesn't spoil anything, really. But anyway, it was a great sex scene because it was really nothing, low-key, really slow, quiet. You know, it's much more like real sex is with a real couple who's been together for a long time, as opposed to watching porn and these young girls trying to act like those porn actresses, which happens, you know? I mean, so...
Yeah, and I think... And that's a really great point, because I feel like what he's doing is he's... It's not that he's lowering the bar at all with her, but he gets rid of any expectations that porn or movies would have the effect on, and he can go into it with a pure mind and going, I'm just going to connect with this person the way that it should be and not the way that the media tells me that it should be.
Exactly.
And that's the direction that this movie is going. I think you can get so distracted by all the subplots or people trying to get distracted by, you know, all these other things that they may or may not be saying, and ultimately, that's really all this movie is
about. Yeah, it's coming of age. John goes from being a, you know, kid that watches porn and expects girls to be like that to an older guy who's, you know, connects with people not based on their number ranking on a scale.
Yeah, exactly. So. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, well, any final thoughts on what kind of a grade would you guys give Don John?
Final thoughts is the budget was $6 million here, and we know that, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt may have a little extra cash that it does not count in this budget, but still, $6 million, it will make a lot of money. There's no doubt. It's already made about $4 million, and
it's actually made $9 million this
weekend. Okay, yeah. So. And last I'd updated it, so yeah. I mean, it's already made, you know, 33% more than it
costs, I don't think this movie made as many theaters as a huge wide release.
But. Yeah, it didn't make the theater that's closer to my house in rural Kentucky, so I'm sure rural America probably didn't get this.
Yeah, for sure.
For good reason, probably.
Yeah.
But I gave it an A+. This favorite JGL movie, so yeah, absolutely.
Is this your favorite movie of the year so far?
No. It's top 5 or 10, but it's not that high for sure. But it's probably top 5, yeah.
All right, Nate, what grade would you give it?
I mean, like I said earlier, it's definitely a well-made movie, well-written. Definitely curious to see what JGL has in store for us next. But, I mean, just overall, it really didn't do anything for me. It's one of those kind of one-off movies. See it once, never see it again. So with that being said, I'm just going to give it a B.
Well, I'll disagree with Nate. I think it's one of those movies you don't necessarily have to watch a ton of times, but it's enough for a one-time watch that makes it really amazing. And because it speaks to a really hard subject, I don't think it's necessary to watch it a ton of times unless porn addiction is something you really like, I guess. But for the movie itself, it's really well made. and the script is amazing. I thought the characters were really well written. They were well acted. I thought it was pieced together really well. Nathan Johnson's score I thought was pretty interesting because it has some like stereotypical rom-com type melodies to it, which I thought was effective in a lot of places.
Wait, so, you're telling me JGL didn't do the score too?
He didn't do the score. No, he did hire someone to do the score. So, and it wasn't Hans Zimmer, unfortunately. But
probably a little much. $6 million probably would have been to him. Yeah.
Nathan Johnson's score is fine. It's actually very effective. Has, like I said, has a lot of neat melodies to it. And is really effective as a movie. It's pieced together well, and it's a great piece of work. And he did a great job with it. I gave it an A as well. I would highly recommend it. It's very good. And Scott has a very nice review of this up on the website right now. You can go and check out at incessionfilm.com.
Again, if you agree or disagree with our takes on Don John, hit us up on Facebook or Twitter, or leave us a comment on our website at incessionfilm.com.
Also, leave a comment on Google Plus or Letterboxd. Our name is on there as In Session Film as well, or email us at insessionfilm@gmail.com.
And we're going to finish off the show now with some awesome movie news that came out over the last week and films we got to see. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Listening to the In Session Film Podcast. This is episode 32, and now we have some fun news items that we're going to go over and discuss. And the first thing I want to talk about is that it has been rumored, I don't think it's been announced yet, but it looks like Michael B. Jordan might be replacing Will Smith for the Independence Day 2 sequels. Do you guys like this?
I'm down with that. I was hoping that Will Smith would come back, but you know, as far as young up and coming black actors go, Michael B. Jordan is about top of the list for me. So maybe this will be end up still being a good thing. I'll be optimistic about it. And so yeah, I like it.
I would love to see Will Smith come back and Michael B. Jordan be his son.
Probably better than his own son.
Better than James.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
That would be a good idea too. I think I don't know how they. Or what they need to do to make this happen, but I feel like Will Smith has got to be a part of this project. He is dying for something good, and he made this movie what it was the first time around, and I feel like with all the other cast coming back, he needs to come back
too. I know, man. It's a shame if they can't get him, because Independence Day, you think of Will Smith first. I do anyway.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I do think Michael B. Jordan is a fantastic replacement. I think he would be very fitting. He's an amazing actor. And if he ended up being the choice, I will not be disappointed. But I got to think that from Will Smith's perspective, he needs to be a part of something that is, even if it's not going to be critically good, something that makes a lot of money. I think this would at least make a lot of money.
And me too.
He needs to be a part of that.
He's also dropped out of Django Unchained in the last couple of years too. So this is two movies he's not been a part of that honestly are better than the movies he's coming out with. So I'm not sure why he just can't step it up a little bit.
Yeah, he's got to make better choices for sure. Okay, moving on. The Wolf of Wall Street, which is set to come out November, I believe. It looks like it is going to be delayed, and we're not exactly sure on the delay. It could be Christmas, or it might be next year sometime. And just for context, the reason that they're looking to delay the film is because the running time right now is 180 minutes, or 3 hours, and it has an NC-17 rating, which they want to cut down to an R, obviously.
Yeah.
So that just for context, that's what we're looking at. So if it is delayed till next year, do you guys think that is a good move or a bad move?
You know, I hate to hear anything delayed, especially that I'm looking so much forward to, but Great Gatsby was also delayed, which also is another Leo movie, which is kind of strange, but I guess whatever it takes to get it out, hopefully it comes out at Christmas, because I really don't want to wait another year to watch this movie.
Yeah, no kidding.
I really want to see it, so, you know, I mean, hopefully they get the rating they want and it comes out soon.
Yeah, if they want any chance of winning any awards, they have to get that down to an R.
Yeah. That's the big thing that I'm thinking about, too. Is,
oh, yeah.
I don't think the three-hour running time will do anything, yeah. But if they want to make money on this, or
you're right.
To maximize the yeah. profit on this film, and for award season, they definitely need to get it to an R for sure.
Yeah.
I would agree with that, too. But I think I read something about, I think it was actually one of the executives for one of the distributors for Don John was saying something about how they think that NC-17 movies, like, they're trying to push them a little bit more toward the general public to make it more accessible, and that it's okay for NC-17 movies to kind of be out there more, because these people aren't doing sex or nudity for the sake of it, not like for pornographic reasons, yeah. but for art and for the movie and for the sake of the film. And so some of these movie makers are trying to distribute it out that way to kind of get the public into, I guess, the mindset of this is okay. And
that makes sense. You know, and there's also a big conversation to be had sometime about the MPAA, because if you've ever seen the documentary, this film is not yet rated. You know, the basis how they rate movies is totally ridiculous. They just get a small group of people together, random, non-educated, not, they have no specific qualities, you know, qualifications. Anyway, so, you know, that it's crazy if you watch one-hour movie and then another. Like, some are way crazier than others. So,
yeah,
it's doesn't surprise me that that's what's holding it up.
And the NC-17 type stuff overseas isn't quite as big a deal.
Yeah.
And it's just over here, our general perception of it isn't quite there yet. And
male nudity is what causes it a lot of time in America. That's what causes the NC-17 rating, because we're just so
I don't want to see it.
Yeah, we can't see that. You know, so bad. But anyway. Yeah.
I think a lot of theaters ban NC-17 movies from playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably the other big
Kentucky
big
doesn't even get some R movies, like Crash, Best Picture winner in 2006. Kentucky never showed it in any theater. I had to go out of state to see it because they, you know, thought it was too racial. And anyway, so you're right. Yeah, they don't show a lot of movies.
Yeah, should be pretty interesting to see what happens with this one. It's pretty highly anticipated from a lot of people, including us. So it's definitely one I'd like to see this year. Even if it's just pushed back to Christmas, I'd be okay with it.
Yeah,
but I'd like
absolutely.
To see it this year. Absolutely. All right, we'll move on. And Nate, I guess I'll let you take the lead on this next one, since this is more your general area. But there's some Harry Potter spinoff movies that are coming out. Why don't you let us know what's going on?
Yes, the author of the Harry Potter books, J.K. Rowling, is writing her first screenplay for kind of a spinoff from that universe called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which is a textbook of Harry Potter's that he has at Hogwarts. So I guess they're going to kind of do a new series based on all of these textbooks that he has at the school, and that's really all we know.
No, nothing else besides that. So, again, you're the Harry Potter guy, not me. In the movies or in the books, do they go into the details of this book at all? Do we know anything about it other than what you just said?
I don't think – I'm just in the second book, and I don't think they've even mentioned textbook yet.
The main character here is in it. You know, of course, the textbook's in there, but they also – I think Harry something to do with Dumbledore. It's something to do with Dumbledore meets – you know, when they meet, I think somehow his mother comes up, which has something to do with his other character. I don't know. It's something that relates to America. I do know that. You know, this guy is like half American or something. So I don't know. I hear a lot of people are excited about it.
All I know is if you mention Harry Potter and movie, people will show up.
Yeah.
And I'm at least for the first one.
I'm interested in Rowling's first screenplay, too, because maybe theoretically down the line when she's older, she could write the screenplays for the old movies, which don't have as good a reputation as the books.
Sure.
Maybe this will allow her to, you know, get some props for her screenwriting.
Absolutely. I think that's a good point. And I think the first one movie will for sure do really well.
I think this will be crazy box office, whatever it
is. People are still itching for more, more Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
I got to get caught up because I still don't remember anything from those movies. Is that it, Nate? Is that all you got? Any other thoughts?
No. I'm just looking forward to it.
Okay. Good stuff. All right, the last thing I want to talk about is that DreamWorks has released its first trailer for the video game adaptation for Need for Speed, which is being directed by Scott Wahl, who directed Act of Valor, and stars Aaron Paul. And what did you guys think about the trailer for Need for Speed?
I thought it looked pretty good, actually. It looks like somewhat like Fast and the Furious, but I'm anxious to see what Aaron Paul can do. He's Jesse on Breaking Bad, of course. And also Dakota Johnson's in here, so I like her a lot. She was just in a movie we saw recently. Oh, no, she's the one who got announced for 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's what it was.
This may be her first big role here. She's one of the top roles. So, yeah, I'm anxious to see this.
It definitely looks like Fast and the Furious with different characters.
It definitely does. I feel like they make it really dramatic. Like, it's very serious. And I haven't played the video game a ton. I don't know. Maybe you guys have.
Oh, I have since they came out. Yeah, since the beginning.
I don't know the story to that.
There
a whole
is no story.
Lot. Okay, so
cars going fast. Yeah.
Okay, so that's pretty much all that I remember from those games. So. But this seems really dramatic. Like, they're trying to be really serious with it, which I don't know if that's a good thing or not. I mean, at least with Fast and the Furious, some of it's over the top. Some of it's very serious, but it's also they make fun with a lot of it too. And I don't see a whole lot of that in this trailer. No. I just see very dark story, serious story, lots of revenge stuff going on here. And that's kind of all that I see with it. So I don't know. Maybe that'll work for people. Maybe, I mean, given the nature of the video game, it is a lot of fast cars going fast.
I would say this looks more like Gran Turismo than Need for Speed, funny enough, because Gran Turismo was always the more serious of the video games.
Sure.
Now we have Fast and the Furious, which is kind of like Need for Speed. And this Need for Speed is going to be like Gran Turismo. So it's kind of a reversal
role.
They're
just confusing everybody.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. Yeah.
Well, one thing for sure, it's going to suck because it's based on a video game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we know that, right?
I've had a lot of great video game adaptations.
Those
sure.
haven't done as well. No. That's very true. We'll see, though. I mean, who knows? All right. Well, I think that's all we got for news this week. Did you guys get to see anything fun this week?
Yeah, I got to see quite a bit. Other than Don John and Rush, I got to see some... older films. Today I just watched Vertigo again in the theater. Nice. Cinemark ran that as part of their classic series. You know, it's incredible. If you've never watched Vertigo, just go watch it before anything else you watch, because not only is it, you know, one of the most heralded movies of all time, features great twists, great turns. You can see so much influence on everything since. And the cinematography is fantastic. You know, Alfred Hitchcock's one of his top three for sure. So I really enjoyed that. I also got to see Jean-Luc Godard's Vis-a-Vis, which translates to My Life to Live, starring Anna Karenina, who is, you know, one of his famous muses, I would say, and also was his wife for a while. You know, it breaks down into 12 tales of the life of a Parisian woman and her slow descent into prostitution. But honestly, it's not so much about that. It's just about really cool characters. You know, nice. French New Wave really... like forward dialogue, quirky, much like Tarantino films.
Yeah.
You know, and there were several scenes in here where I recognized from the Before trilogy. So there was a lot of stuff that was basically ripped straight out of this movie and put into Before Sunrise in particular. A pinball machine scene.
Yeah.
Also a record store scene. I mean, they're both in this movie. So Jean-Luc Godard definitely influences Linklater as well as Tarantino.
What year is that movie?
That was 1958, I believe. Yeah, that was 58. And then I saw Journey to Italy, which for Criterion fans, they will know that the biggest box set of the year just came out this week, and I had pre-ordered it a long time ago. It's Roberto Rossellini and Ingrid Bergman, three films that they did together. And this one is just about a couple who drives to Naples, and they're going to dispose of the inherited uncle's villa, the inherited villa the uncle gave them. This is like Before Midnight, so this is why two Linklater got Before Midnight from this.
Really?
That's it. I mean,
I have to go check it out, because I love the Before series.
Yeah, the Before trilogy is based on this primarily. You know, one of the biggest, you know, cinematic influences was... Robert Rossellini's Journey to Italy, 1954. So, yeah.
Check that out. Yeah, absolutely. Is that all good to see?
That's it, though, yeah.
I will want to check this out for sure. All right, Nate, what did you get to see this week?
I got to see nothing.
Imagine that.
Don John and Rush.
All right, what did you get to read this week?
Oh, Harry Potter. I'm on the
How
second.
How far are you? Yeah.
Got like 100 pages left in the second book.
Is it going as well as the first one?
Yeah, it is actually. It's really good.
Very nice. And if you guys are just wondering out there, Nate will be starting a Harry Potter book podcast starting next month.
No.
We may do a marathon at some point.
Yeah. We'll probably get a ton of fans.
That's true.
Exactly.
That's true.
That's why we got to do that Harry Potter series.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I got to see a few things. One, I got to see, speaking of sex addiction and male nudity, I watched Shame.
Yes. Good. Is that the first time you watched it?
Yeah, that was awesome. The first time watch.
Awesome. That pairs really well with Don John.
It does, and which is kind of one of the reasons I wanted to see it. It was on HBO, and it kind of going along the theme of what we were going to talk about. So I kind of wanted to watch it, and I didn't quite enjoy it as much as Don John. Like, I thought Don John spoke to that same kind of stuff, but was engaging to me, where this story to me was just really boring, and I didn't really care about the characters. But I will say Michael Fassbender is really good. I think the performances here are great. Carey Mulligan is also great.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, the performances are fantastic.
Easily her best.
Yeah, and so that part of the film was enjoyable. I just didn't really care for the story. It just wasn't engaging to me. I was just kind of in and out of it the whole time.
Nate,
so.
Have you seen this?
Mm-hmm.
Steve McQueen is your guy, yep. Right? Fassbender, yeah. Steve McQueen. You like that? I know.
Yeah, I do.
Do you like this or no?
Not really. No.
This is one of my favorite films of all time. So
really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really? Wow.
And I identify tons with that character, although I've never done any male sex or anything I will say. But
Have you had threesomes with the prostitutes?
I don't want to go into that here, but...
I'm just kidding. You know? Just kidding.
But yeah, I love this. Carey Mulligan. Oh, the scene where she's in the shower, you know.
Yeah.
Incredible. Her acting there. Then you go watch Drive. Shows why I love Carey Mulligan. Sure. She has so much range.
She's great. And the performances are fantastic. They're definitely through the roof.
Yeah.
I just didn't care for... The story wasn't engaging enough for me, I'll say.
Yeah.
But it wasn't bad. It was okay, I guess. I also rewatched Transformers: Dark of the Moon, mostly because the girl wanted to see it and she hadn't seen it yet.
Sure, sure she did.
Well, I'm not going to argue. Well, she knows it's my favorite series, so she's been slowly watching them. In fact, she actually watched the second one without me, which I thought was kind of impressive. I was really proud of her.
You're rubbing off on her, man.
I know. I almost cried when she told me.
I believe that.
So that was pretty pretty amazing.
Yep.
And so this last week, she hadn't seen the third one yet, so she suggested it. I was like, all right, well, we'll put it in. And just rewatched that. And I guess the biggest thing that I noticed this time on the rewatch is that Steve Jablonski's score, I think he's gotten screwed out of a ton of recognition, because his scores for all of those films are incredible.
Maybe he's dismissed on the whole stupid Michael Bay, you know, argument, because I agree the score in those is memorable. I mean, I remember it, absolutely. And I haven't seen it for years. So
no score for Transformers will ever get nominated.
I know, but it's so stupid. Good though. If you just listen to the music itself without any regards for the film, it's amazing. It was really funny. I was actually, we were on our way to a wedding on Friday, and we had a third person in the car with us, and one of the scores from that came on the music on the way down there. And
I can't believe it. Such shock.
I know, right? Well, I mean, it was on shuffle. But this person that was with us, she hadn't seen the film. Yeah. She doesn't know she knows what movies are.
Right.
Okay, I'm joking, but she doesn't know anything about Michael Bay's score. She's just listening to the music, and she's like, man, this is really good. This is really beautiful. Those were her exact words. And she doesn't know Transformers at all.
Yeah. Speaks to his talent.
So I think a lot of people will enjoy them anyway. I think it's a really good score. There's tons of videos on YouTube where people have ripped his music or played it on different things. I mean, people like it a lot.
By the way, Joseph Gordon-Levitt mentioned today on the podcast I was listening to with him, he Michael Bay was an influence on Don John a little.
I can see that now that you say it.
MTV, a lot of MTV stuff. But he mentioned those two specifically. So Michael Bay, you know, influencing everybody, artsy to action.
Absolutely. Anyway, go listen to the score. Even if you hate Transformers, the score is great. And then the only thing I watched was the Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show started this last week.
I haven't watched that yet. Should I?
Yes. If you, I'll say this. If you like the whole Marvel universe.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
then you should watch the show, because at some point there will be a TV crossover to the movies.
Now that's what I want to hear. That's all I was
it's going
about.
To happen. Yeah. The first episode is a spinoff directly from Iron Man 3.
Nice.
And you get a better understanding of Iron Man 3 from watching really? The first episode. Yes.
So they definitely want you to know we're yes. not going to separate
direct
this
crossovers. Good. It picks up right after the events of the Avengers in New York. Wow. And it goes right into what happens with the spinoff from Iron Man 3. It was really good. It was really cool.
That sounds awesome.
And of course, they go into Agent Coulson a little bit with what happened. And they don't fully explain it. You get a little bit of a perspective from Agent Coulson's perspective. But there's much more there that he doesn't know about mm-hmm. that they haven't explained yet. So yeah. I'm really curious to see how that goes. Now, we'll say some of the acting isn't the greatest.
But it is TV.
And the production value, obviously, is not quite the same.
Yeah.
But given what they have to work with, it was good. The first episode was awesome. And from what I've seen from the previews this next week, it looks like the crossover good. From Iron Man 3 is going to be even more in this next episode.
Good to hear. I'll definitely check it out.
So at some point, there will be crossovers. And there are a couple of the characters from the Avengers, not just Coulson, but
right,
he's also on the TV show.
Yeah.
So pretty interesting. I would highly recommend it if you like that universe. And then the last thing I'll just mention real fast is I saw the first two episodes of the first season for Game of Thrones. And so far, it's been pretty boring and I've had a hard time getting into it, but I'm only two episodes in. So,
yeah. I've never watched Game of Thrones, but I have it. I've just not watched it yet.
I've heard good things about it and people tend to like
awesome.
It. So,
yeah.
Nate
awesome.
Likes it, but so far, it's been pretty terrible. Well, I shouldn't say terrible. It's just been very boring so far. But we'll see. And that's all I got to see this week.
Be sure to like us on Facebook at facebook.com/InSessionFilm. You can follow us on Twitter at InSessionFilm and on Google+, where our username is InSessionFilm. We've been putting up a lot of videos lately. So be sure to check those out on YouTube at youtube.com/InSessionFilm. And make sure to sign up for our weekly newsletter. And you can do that on Facebook by clicking the newsletter tab or go to the site at insessionfilm.com/newsletter.
And all of our reviews are up on our website as well as Letterboxd. So check us out at letterboxd.com/insessionfilm. We try to respond to every piece of email. So email us at insessionfilm@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and on Stitcher. And while you're on iTunes, give us a review. We would greatly appreciate that. Also check out our Listen Now page at the website.
And the Insession Film Podcast is supported by listeners like you, our premium podcasts, which include our weekly bonus content. You can get for just 99 cents. Just click on the premium tab on the main menu at InSessionFilm.com to buy one today. And you can hear all of our content on our mobile app for just a one-time fee of $1.99. And you can find our app on the Amazon market for Android devices and the podcast box app for iOS devices. And all of those details are on the website at InSessionFilm.com/apps. And that'll do it for this week's show. We want to thank Arcturus from the MGC TV podcast once again for being here. He was incredible. I hope you guys enjoyed him. He'll definitely be back on the show soon. He's awesome. Definitely go check out their podcast. And next week on the show is Gravity. Really looking forward to that
one. Yeah. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah. So it should be pretty good. And we'll try to come up with our next movie series. As I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, we're gonna do that just every few months from here on out, just to give us the chance to go into them in depth in the proper way and to give our main weekly show the time that it needs as well. So that being said, do you guys have any final thoughts before we get out of here today?
No, just looking forward to Gravity, maybe Runner, as well as Metallica Through the Never, which is getting really good reviews right now. And I'm not necessarily a big Metallica fan, but that's next week, so
yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm not either, but I've heard some pretty good things about it.
I'm into good concert movies, if they're good, you know.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, we'll see.
I'm pretty pumped to see Gravity in IMAX 3D.
It's going to be awesome. I'm pretty excited for it.
Yeah.
It's going to be good. I'm also looking forward to Parkland. That comes out next weekend as well.
Was that next week?
Yeah, that's next week as well, so I'm pretty excited for that. And we'll have reviews of both of those movies next weekend on the website. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to all of that as well. And next week, we are going to have our guest will be Jonathan Berry. He was on the podcast the week we did Elysium, if you want to go and check that out. But he should be here, granted any scheduling conflicts at all, which should be pretty fun. So,
absolutely.
That being said, we'll get out of here for this week. Go see Gravity in Parkland next weekend, and we'll see you on the In Session Film Podcast. Nate, how was your week?
It was good. I didn't do anything as usual.
I'll probably keep that at the end.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, sorry.